And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 832. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. We're talking San Francisco Giants tonight. And Bogman and the Welsh on yesterday's show joked that you just talk into the mic by yourself for 30 minutes or so. I said, no, I have a friend that cries with me on air to discuss this each and every year. And that friend is a friend of mine, a friend of yours, a friend of the industry. He's the man behind TGFBI. He runs our Barf League. He's on. He writes for Fangraphs. He's one of the co-hosts of Sleeper and the Bust. He's the creator of Friends of Fantasy Benefits. I probably missed four other things because he just does a little bit of this, that, and the other. But you can also find him on Twitter and other social medias at Justin Mason FWFB. Justin Mason, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. You know, we got past football. We survived. Yep. And now it's our time to shine, right? Like, the football people can go away for a little while and we can focus on baseball, you know, full time, you know, until football starts back up again. So we got a good 6 months to enjoy ourselves.
Yeah, 6 months to enjoy ourselves. If you're an XM subscriber, 3 months, but well, that's another story for another day. But
lucky it's not 3 days at this point.
I know, it's crazy, but I always laugh at that one. I guess why people just listen to podcasts, so much easier. Before we get started talking Giants baseball, my friend, I mentioned you're a busy, busy man. So what do you got going on these days so people can keep up with you?
Oh, God. I write mostly at Fangraphs and Fantasy Pros. I'm writing usually about five times a week at Fangraphs and then anywhere from 3 to 5 times a week at Fantasy Pros. You know, the preseason schedule is a lot more irregular for me, especially Fantasy Pros, where it's like, you know, this month I've got 13 articles, you know, next month I might have 18 articles or whatever. And then in season, it kind of, we get into a regular rotation. So, but you can catch all my written stuff on Fangraphs Fantasy Pros and then hear me on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast and the Sleeper in the Bus podcast as well. Like I said, TGFBI is, you know, right around the corner. If you aren't eligible for TGFBI and you want to win your way in for next year, you can go sign up for a satellite league at tgfbi.com and try to win your way in for the next years. And then, yeah, Tout Wars. I'm on the Tout Wars board now. And so we're kind of getting ready for that as well. It's just been, you know, this time of year is crazy, but I love it.
Yes. That's the thing is I've known you for a long time. You've been doing it a couple years longer than me. And we're two of the crazier ones out there when it comes to just what the heck are we, what's free time? Don't know what that is, but it's because what you said at the end is because we love it. And that's, it's always said labor of love in the end is what this is. And yeah, what is also a labor of love is being a Giants fan. So, cause everyone goes, well, you have rings. I'm like, I'm sorry. Yes, we do. I'm not going to displace that. But that the last one was 10 years ago. It feels like an eternity at this point.
That just made me sad right there. I didn't think that it was 10 years ago.
Again, like I told you, I had to take the abuse of two Diamondbacks fans yesterday who are dear friends of ours. And they kept trying to say rings, rings. And I'm like, I'd rather have been to the World Series like you guys and probably lost a couple years ago. At least your team was good. But we'll talk Giants and we'll vent. But before we get into the players, Justin, I always ask, what were your thoughts on 2025? I always joke only one team is ultimately happy with how things go. But other teams can take positives. I don't know what the Giants take. I'm curious what your thoughts.
You know, you and I were kind of briefly talking about this before we hit record. So I'll just kind of re-say what I said there is the Giants have been a team for really like the last 6, 7, 8 years where they have tried to do too many things at once, right? Like they're the Dynasty League team that tries to improve their farm system and win at the same time. And that never works. Like in your Dynasty League teams, like those are the teams that like are perennially finishing 5th, 6th, 7th, right? Because they're good, but they're not good enough to get over the hump and win. And their farm system's okay, but it's not good enough to actually replenish their, you know, their active roster because they're trading away too many pieces in order to try to compete. So the Giants have done this kind of fence sitting thing, and you know, and I do joke about like, you know, if you sit on the fence too long, the fence gets wedged up there, and that's kind of where the Giants have been. Is they're in this situation where they have been unwilling to commit to an identity as an organization, and have left themselves pretty mediocre, not bad, but not good, just kind of mediocre.
Yeah, they're like a team. it's frustrating to like to emphasize your point. It's you can see so much that's good with this team, and you can see like where they're building a team, but there's like a couple glaring holes, and it's just not patched up with even anything that, you know, as seen on TV can fix. Like, it's just it's a bad deal. I'll ask you this also, since you I can at least relate to this. When Farhan came over, I know many of us were excited. That did not work. Now Posey's in charge, and I know many of us are excited. And part of it, I think, is because Posey did so many things for us that it's hard not to love him forever. It's also – so I think it's a big – we give him the benefit of the doubt no matter what, almost. But where are you at on the Posey train? Because like some Giants fans are – it's whatever Posey does, I trust. And then other ones are like, I don't know. It feels like we're still, you know, stuck in, you know, neutral, as you said.
Yeah, I mean – I understand why people were excited, because he was, you know, homegrown guy, like, right. We drafted him, we developed him. He, you know, not just became a superstar, but a Hall of Famer. You know, he should be like first ballot Hall of Fame. And, you know, face of our franchise for three world championships. And so like, I understand why people were like excited, because it's always cool to have like your kid, your guy, you know, become, you know, the dad of the organization or whatever. I've been very underwhelmed. I haven't loved a lot of the decisions that they've made as an organization. Like I said, I still think they are trying to do this, hey, we're competing thing, but are we really? Like, we're not really willing to go and like spend as much as, you know, obviously no one can spend as much as the Dodgers, but even come close. Yeah. Right. I personally think, and I told you this, you know, before we started recording, like, I think 2021 kind of screwed us, right? When we had this amazing year, won all those games, what, 120-something games or whatever it was, 119. And I think it tricked the organization from top to bottom into thinking that we were good, that we were really good. Like, you can't be, like, really good and win this amount of games. And there's some truth to that, but ultimately, like, if you really looked at things from an objective standpoint, like, we got really lucky. Right? We got really lucky. And we should have rebuilt, like, just torn it down, especially while the Dodgers are in this amazing window that they're going to be in for a while of having all this talent and a fantastic farm system. We should use that as an opportunity to be like, okay, let's reset, let's rebuild, let's get that amazing farm system, because then we can go out and spend and supplement the prospects that come up with star talent through free agency and trade. And they didn't. And I think, and you know, as much as I love Posey for what he did as a player, I don't know that I love this direction that they're going in, because it feels a lot of the same mediocrity that we've had for really long, or not really long time, but a fair amount of time now.
Yep. Nope. I'm with you. I'm just curious in that, because everyone loves their Buster Posey. All right, let's talk players. The first big move Posey made was last trade deadline by bringing Rafael Devers over. And I'm still kind of not sure where we're going with Rafael Devers. Like, I love the skill set of Rafael Devers. There's the, is he a DH? Is he a first baseman? What's that deal? We know what he is for us, but that was a dilemma as well. He came over, hit plenty of power still, even in San Francisco. Batting average was down compared to his norms, Justin, but ADP over the last 7 days in DC's is around 64. Where are you at on Rafael Devers entering 2026?
I think the ADP ultimately is fine. I don't really have necessarily an issue with it. It's just not a player that I'm ever going to end up with, I don't think. There are too many underlying skills issues that I worry about. I mean, his zone contact last year was 73%. And for those of you who don't listen to my podcast and know how much I love zone contact, that's a really, really bad sign for me in terms of, you know, where we're going to be at in terms of quality of contact, in terms of strikeout rate. And that just scares me so much. Now he makes up for it for just being a really, really good athlete and having really, really fast hands, but that can slow down and we could see holes. And what we did see when he came over to San Francisco was that, like, he struggled. The strikeout rate went up. You know, the power was still there. I think the power will still be there, but if he strikes out at like a 30% clip, I'm not really going to be surprised. And I don't know that that batting average is going to be as good as it's been in the past. I think you'll still get power. I think this lineup is still pretty good around him. So you get RBIs and runs scored. So from a Giants perspective, a team perspective, they love having this big bat that can actually hit 30 home runs because we've gone so long without that. From a fantasy perspective, I feel like I don't want to invest in a guy with those kind of flaws as early as he goes. And so I tend to, while the ADP is fine, generally speaking, I tend to stay away from that kind of profile of that kind of red flag and go for a player who doesn't. Because when you're drafting the top 100, all the players are good, right? So take the players who have the least red flags.
That is very, very true. With Devers, yeah, I haven't drafted him as snake. I took him in my only auction so far. I got him for like $18 or something.
It's fine. Seemed
reasonable. Yeah, I was like, as a CI, it's like I just added power, essentially. Because my only thing is, yeah, it wasn't great last year, but even if that's his floor, it's not horrible. To his ADP, it's not great. But I'm wondering, he was so hurt all season. He played through it all. Like, I'm wondering if any minute part of that could affect things. Who knows? We'll find out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, when guys are playing injured, when guys, and I mean, we also don't want to like discount the fact that like it's very rare for a player to be traded at that time of year, right? And with the amount of heat that was on him in kind of the public sphere because of what was going on in Boston, like we don't know how that maybe affected him. Like, he could just go back to being the guy he's always been. Right. Like, and it wouldn't surprise me at all because he, you know, even when he got to San Francisco, he's still answering questions about what happened in Boston. Those questions will be gone now. And he'll get to focus on, you know, a position that he's now gotten to learn. He'll be more comfortable. There is a lot of reasons to believe like he's just going to be fine and be the guy he's always been. I do worry about those underlying skills, though, because those type of things, as you start to age, and he's still, you know, he's still 29. Those things catch up for you real quick.
Yep. Oh, I agree. That's why he's a tough one. That's why in snakes I usually avoid at that price, because there's a lot of question marks to be had. But I think you and I both basically agree it could get worse, but also there's a chance that we get back to Rafael Devers, which is pretty darn cool. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the 30-plus home runs the Giants been missing. We actually had one last year. Willy Adames did it. 32 home runs. Haven't seen that in forever. For a San Francisco Giant, or he hit 30, sorry, after hitting 32 in 2024. 225 average, so the average took a hit once again. Still stole 12 bags. That was like one of the biggest questions after stealing 21 bags in 2024. Would he run? So he saw some speed still, tons of power. Average definitely took a hit below what you'd like. ADP is around 127, so he's kind of in like that second, maybe third tier of shortstops right now. What are your thoughts on Adames this year after that first season with the Giants?
So I think Adames is kind of in an interesting spot, especially at shortstop, where he kind of like is the last shortstop or one like in a tier of like, the last shortstops that you really feel good about that like don't have major either profile issues. Like, I love Jacob Wilson. But Jacob Wilson's not going to run. He's not going to hit for power. Like, you're really getting your betting average, right? Some people really love Ezekiel Tovar. But Ezekiel Tovar's, like, swing decisions are insanely bad. You know, like, Adames is one of the last guys at the ADP in shortstop where you go, hey, he kind of does a little bit of everything. The only thing he didn't do last year was hit for batting average. And, you know, I think part of that can be blamed on a 263 BABIP. And kind of readjusting to this new home park. The question is, like, where does the batting average kind of come back to? You know, he makes league average zone contact, swings outside of the zone, about the right amount. Swing strike rate was, you know, 12.5%. So you're looking at like a 25-26% strikeout rate, which in this day and age is fine. Hits the ball hard, you know, love to see that. You know, the power not dipping. Going from Milwaukee to San Francisco is a really, really good sign that the park is not going to be a problem for him. And I think he's probably, you know, more of a, you know, 235, 240 ish type of hitter in, you know, after an adjustment year. So, like, I think Adames is fine. I think maybe the only other question I have for him is, what happens with this new manager? Are they going to run? Tennessee did not run a lot, comparatively speaking to other college programs. And so is this going, are they going to like really put red lights on people on the base paths? Or are they not? Like, we have no idea what Vitello will do. I mean, he's never coached in Major League Baseball. And we also don't know, like, you know, is it going to be an organizational philosophy change? Right, the Giants have not been a team who likes to run a ton. They were second lowest stolen base totals in baseball last year. So I do worry a little bit that we could see the stolen bases dry up a little bit more. And I don't know where the batting average really is going to fall, but like, he's a good power source, and he does kind of have that, like, he is kind of the demarcation line of the really good shortstops.
Yep, he's definitely the end of the road. And one of the good things that one of your co-hosts is Jason Collette has done the research for and talks about a lot, that in spring training, you'll see teams trends with steals, and it's usually something that sticks. It's like, it's a good way to pick up on it. So for a first time coach, if we see the Giants now with the baseball classic, that could screw things up. But we could see the Giants, you know, running wild the first few weeks, and maybe, just maybe, that gives us at least a hint of what's going on.
Yeah.
All right, Matty Chapman, a guy that's hard not to root for. 21 home runs last year after hitting 27. Still picked up the 9 steals, obviously had some time on the IL. So he was in for another double-digit steal season, maybe 25 home runs, hit 231. He basically gave you a Matt Chapman season. This is who he is. You kind of know, like, what you're going to get. ADP is around 165. He's also one of the last kind of third basemen before things get real murky as well. There's a trend with the Giants. Mm-hmm. So what's your thoughts with Matt Chapman?
I like Chapman. You know, like, I think the big issue with him is, one, like, the stolen bases, are those going to dry up? Like, is he one of those guys that kind of gets a red light because Vitello maybe won't like the runs? He's definitely a guy that I want to see steal some bases in spring training if I'm going to pencil in more than, like, 5 stolen bases. Because his stolen bases came out of nowhere. He hadn't had more than 4 stolen bases in an entire season before. He stole 15 in 2024 and then 9 again last year. So stolen bases, like, are really a weird conundrum, and it's interesting. Somebody the other day, like, said, like, oh, team doesn't really matter in terms of stolen bases. And it's like, what? No, that's all that matters. Like that's, like, the team context is the most important thing in terms of stolen bases, because they'll let, you know, certain teams are going to let people run wild. Doesn't matter how fast or slow you are. And other teams are going to say, no, we're not going to risk getting outs on the base paths. So what the Giants do in terms of that will determine a lot of Chapman's stolen base upside, or downside. The other thing with Chapman is just the health, right? He's 32. He's going to be 33 very early on in the season. He's had 2 of the last 3 years where he hasn't gotten to 600 plate appearances. So it's really hard to project that right now, to project him for more than maybe like 575 plate appearances. But those are going to be 575 good plate appearances. Dude still hits for power. He actually had really good underlying contact numbers last year. It was like the second best zone contact of his career. We know he can take walks. You know, he's a guy who is really, really strong in terms of understanding the strike zone. And there's a lot of pop in the bat. So definitely a guy I like. And I don't think the price is bad at all when we're, especially when we're talking about like a third base position that is kind of gross. Brutal. It is definitely not fun. Like, 167 seems like a really, really good price point, and he's kind of in a tier of guys that I love in Royce Lewis, Addison Barger, Matt Chapman, Isaac Paredes if he finds a way out of Houston. So it's kind of the area I want to be attacking, third base. I do end up with Royce Lewis a lot more because I'm a glutton for punishment, but I have no problem taking Chapman there.
2 things. I took Chapman in my Beat Bubba OC on Monday night, so I'm with you there, but I had Royce Lewis queued up as well. I am ready to take that again. With you.
It's just too good of a price. Like,
it's a great price. And like, when I did my Twins preview with Brandon Warren, who covers the Twins, I didn't even realize it as much. He mentioned like his stolen bases in the second half. Mm-hmm. And his sprint speed increased each month. Like, that says health to me, folks. Again, we know he can hurt like by sneezing the wrong way.
Yeah.
But a healthy Royce Lewis, like, he went 12 and 13 at that ADP, that's all he really has to do. Now go find your ceiling, kid. Like,
yeah, the price is too good to. I mean, because there is. I know we're talking. I know we're enjoying a Giants preview. We're talking about a Twins guy, but like, we were talking about third base yesterday on Sleeper on the Bus, finishing out third base preview. And I said, and I do believe, like, I think there's a 30-25 season in Royce Lewis's body if he can stay on the field. It's just a matter of him staying on the field. And at this price, it's worth a gamble.
He's a fun auction bid for me because he goes from anywhere from $4 to $6. Like, that's a gamble.
I'll all day long. All day long.
Yeah, I'll take that bait and live and die with it.
We need to do an auction together, clearly.
We should. I love auction. Like, yeah. I'm so hooked on him. If they didn't take 4.5 hours, I would never do a snake draft again.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite format. It's the best format, auctions.
It's love amazing. Them. All right, let's get to the outfield. Back to the outfield. Jung-Hoo Lee played 150 games last year, which is a plus after his first season. 8 homers, 10 steals, 266. I think we expect a better batting average from Lee, but other than that, I think it's kind of also who we expect. The rest of it was kind of what we expect from Lee, maybe a little more than what we got, but his ADP is 285. I usually just avoid it because I don't see a ceiling here. But what are your thoughts on Jung-Hoo Lee?
Jung-Hoo Lee is a fine, deep league accumulator, right? Like, he doesn't do anything particularly well, but he does enough of everything to, like, be rostered as, like, a bench bat and a 15-teamer. I don't think he's much more than that, and I agree with you. Like, I just don't see a ton of upside here. And this is one of these, you know, decisions the Giants made where it's kind of like, oh, why are we paying this guy $18 million a year? Like, he's also moving out of center field to right. He's going to be the right fielder full time now that they've got Bader. And I do wonder, like, is that going to be an issue for him too? Because I don't think he's a very strong defender to begin with. And now you're going to be playing that wall in right field. And I never love when a guy moves to a new position because it means he's got one more thing to focus on other than hitting. So, like, I'm never going to end up with Jung-Hoo Lee on my teams. I just don't think there is enough upside. You know, yes, it is a very safe floor. I think you can pretty easily pencil him in for 600 plate appearances, probably like a 10-10 type of line with like a 270 to, you know, 265-ish batting average. Like, it's totally cromulent, great in NL only, but like outside of NL only, I don't even want him in a 15-team mix for the most part.
There might be a world where he'll have streaming relevance or something. I don't even know what that rule is, but it's tough.
It's when other guys are hurt, like, you know, and you go, I just need someone who's going to play. Like, he's a DC guy. Like, for those of you who play draft champions, because, like, what wins in those leagues are plate appearances, and Jung-Hoo Lee will get plate appearances. But, like, he's not a guy that I want to be like, oh, this is going to be my fourth or fifth outfielder, like, for the whole season. Like, I don't believe that. Like, that's just not true.
Yeah, I'm curious with the defense, because they said he never played center field till he came with the Giants. See, he's always been a corner outfielder. But, like, I found that hard to believe, for one. And B, right field in San Francisco, to your point, you made, not a normal right field. So those are both concerning.
He wasn't considered a particularly strong defender in the KBO. So when they were like, oh, he's going to be our left or our center fielder, I'm like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
Either you guys know something I don't, or you're just like, hey, we're paying you all this money, play center field. And that's what it really felt like. So,
yep, agreed. All right, the latest offensive acquisition. I am going to keep all my opinions to myself to hear Justin's first, but Luis Arraez joins the Giants, 8 homers, 11 steals, hit 292 last year for the Padres. ADP's 262 over the last 7 days in DCs. What are your thoughts?
All right, so there's two very different opinions here, right? First one is the real life baseball. This is a terrible real life baseball move. Like, it's just like, he is a really bad defender at first base. And now he's going to be our second baseman. On like a team that should have really strong infield defense on the other side. And now you're pairing him up with Devers on the right side, like, who's a really, really bad defensive first baseman. So for those of you hoping to draft a lot of Logan Webb this year, you may want to take him down a peg or two in your ranks, you know, or any Giants pitcher, especially anybody who puts the ball on the ground. Because the the Chapman Adamas side of the infield is going to be really good, and the Arise Dever side is going to be really, really bad. So from a real life baseball perspective, this made no sense whatsoever. This felt like, oh, we need to do something because we keep finishing second in free agent markets. And oh, look, Luis Arise has won batting titles. You know, like that means anything in today's baseball. Like, and this is what I mean about, like, I don't love the Giants moves and what the hell they do. But from a fantasy perspective, like, Luis Arise is what Luis Arise has always been. He's a guy who will give you batting average. If you need batting average, you can take Luis Arise. I often feel in a snake draft specifically that if you are drafting Luis Arise, it means you have made a huge mistake somewhere else, right? You have messed up your batting average on your team earlier on in the draft, where now you have to take Luis Arise, which then brings back any advantage you did get in the counting categories by sacrifice. So, like, I think that Luis Arise is a mistake draft, especially in snake drafts. In auctions, I think he gets underrated. I think these kind of profiles get underrated because like, you can often get guys like this, guys like Willy Adames for like single digit bids. And they almost always give you more of that than that in the end of the year auction values. That being said, I still don't want these guys on my team, because the problem with one category players like Arise, like Chandler Simpson, is if they get hurt, so much of your team projection was based on having that guy. And if they get hurt, you know, or like in Chandler Simpson's case last year, get sent back down to the minors, there aren't players on the wire that can replace that one category the way that they were doing it. And so I never liked drafting those guys really in any format. So I hate it for the Giants. I hate it for fantasy. I guess it wasn't two different takes.
Okay, so we're on the same page. I was furious when they made this signing. I was in the middle of doing something, so I didn't see the breaking news. Saw it in the Discord, and I'm like, yeah, it's awesome. Real awesome. Great job, guys. Horrific defense. Even worse at second, like you mentioned. And all. And if he doesn't hit 320, he's doing nothing for us at all. Yeah. Like, nothing. So I'm praying he hits 320. Just see, hopefully.
And I even, like, I heard a lot of people saying this next point, and I said it too in some regards. There's no such thing as a bad one-year deal, but that doesn't make every one-year deal a good deal, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, there's no bad one-year deals because you're not locked into the player, right? Like, if they suck, you just go, oh, well, we're eating the 12 or 13 million or whatever, you know, he got paid, right? But that doesn't mean it's good. Just because something isn't bad doesn't mean it's good. It can just be eh, right? And that's what the Luis Arise deal from the Giants' perspective is it's kind of eh. Yep. You know, like, it's not really bad because they did need a second baseman, and he can hit for average. But, like, there's so many negatives, I don't think they even come close to outweighing the positives.
I agree completely. Let's talk Elliot Ramos. Big expectations entering last year. Took a little bit of a step back in 157 games. Still a good season. 21 homers, 6 steals at 256. But after what we saw in 2024, I think people wanted more. And when I broke into his profile, it was basically two different approaches at the plate, it felt like, from 2024 to 2025. So I keep trying to say, which one is he? And that's my conundrum entering draft season. So his ADP is 206, Justin, over the last 7 days. What are your thoughts on Elliot Ramos? Because, again, I think there's a really good player there, but also if he's too cautious, we saw what we got last year, which is fine.
Yeah, what we really saw was, like, a lack of aggressiveness from Elliot Ramos that wasn't really in the profile at any point of his career. So I don't know if this was a team decision to be like, hey, we want you to be more patient, we want you to take pitches. It didn't really work. He did make more contact in the zone. It was actually like he went from 84% zone contact to 87.5% zone contact, but he was so passive, his called strike rate went from 14% to 17%. That's a massive jump. And pitchers noticed it, right? Like, at first in the season, pitchers were kind of going out of the zone more. And then all of a sudden, you see like a 2%. And for those who don't know, like, zone rate percentage, like, it's a amount of time pitchers attack the zone against a hitter, or if you're talking about a four pitcher, it's about how often they pepper the zone. Like 1 or 2% difference in zone percentage is massive. It is really massive. And he had an almost 2% percentage jump in zone percentage. So pitchers picked up on this and he never readjusted back. And that's the one thing about like you want to see from kind of a younger player. And I know Ramos isn't technically a young player anymore. He's, 26. But like pitchers are going to change the way they attack you if you're doing well. And it's up to you as a hitter to figure out how to change back, attack them in a different way. And Ramos got really attacked within the zone because pitchers realized he wasn't being as aggressive, and he never got aggressive. Like he never took that and said, okay, if you're going to throw in the zone, I'm going to hit it over the fence, because he can. He's got a lot of power. And so like I need to see kind of what he looks like in spring. Is he still being passive? Is he, is he going to start attacking? I'd love to see him attack things on the first pitch a hell of a lot more than he did in 2025. But we need to see it. And so, like, I'm not, this is one of the guys that, like, I have two different draft lists, right? I have a before spring training draft list, and then I change my draft list once spring training starts, right? Like, there's certain guys, with the Spencer Schwalenbach news. Everybody knows how big a Spencer Schwalenbach guy I am, like a massive Schwalenbach guy. But he was not on my draft list prior to spring training. So I didn't get burnt by this injury, because I those guys who I have question marks about health or question marks about skills, I go, I'm not going to touch you until I see you play.
Man, that's real spring growth, Justin, for you, by the way.
It is. I used to be the guy that would light money on fire, like chasing injury upside. Or just upside in general, but like I really, really kind of partition out my draft list, and like I think some people like they put together a draft list whenever they start drafting, and that's their draft list all the way through. I'm continuing to reevaluate, and I think Elliot Ramos is a really good example of someone we need to really evaluate in spring. Is he being aggressive at the plate, or is he being passive again? Because if he's passive again, I think he'll be fine. He'll do what he did in 2025, which is 20 plus home runs, a handful of steals, a 260 batting average type guy. But I do think if he can learn how to be a little bit more aggressive in the zone, especially when pitchers are attacking there, like there's 30 home run power in this bat. But he's not the kind of guy who's going to do it by only swinging inside the zone like 60% of the time.
Agreed. And we're seeing the same thing when breaking him down. It's like, if he's aggressive, I think he's an awesome like third outfielder or second outfielder upside in a fantasy league. But the way he was last year, he's not even really viable in a 12 for me. He's more of like a fourth or fifth than a 15. So yeah, it's a tough profile. Again, I think there's a ton of skill there. Still super young. We'll see where it sits. Like you said, spring training, very, very important. Another new Giant, new center fielder for the Giants, Harrison Bader, 17 homers, 11 steals last year, hit .277, played really well with the Phillies to finish out the season. He's always been a little bit of a power and speed guy, or a lot more speed than power, but we've seen power throughout his career. ADP is 303 over the last 7 days. I'm intrigued at his ADP.
I'm not. Okay. I mean, this is an accumulator profile. He's going to play because he is good defensively, and the Giants just paid him money to play. But from like an offensive perspective, yes, I know he hit .277 last year, but it was a .359 BABIP. His XBA was .220, which is much closer to his career line of .225. Like, this is not a good hitter. There is a little bit of power, but a lot of it's going to get sucked up in this park. Yeah, he has some speed, but the Giants weren't a team that ran. We don't know what Vitello's going to do, right? If they're running all over the place in spring, maybe I changed my mind a little bit on Bader. He walked a little bit more last year, but like the previous three seasons last year, he was like a five or sub 5% walk guy. So like, I just don't see a ton of upside in Bader's bat. 303, there's not like a amazing ADP where you have to be like, how do I like not take that? Like, there are a lot of really good guys going right around you know, Harrison Bader. Like I think I would much rather take, like, you know, or sorry, 365 is the ADP I see for him. You know, Justin Crawford's going 354, you know, like, I'll take that gamble there. You know, like, how much different is Bader than Victor Robles? Victor Robles has real speed. That's you true. Know, like, I don't know. I'm not intrigued by Bader. So I'm interested to see why you are.
I am, just because I know he's going to play every day. I think he is. I think there is a 15-15 guy there, because righty power actually isn't as zapped in that ballpark compared to lefty power.
That's true.
So I could see him still, because, like, he's got the pull profile that can play there, and he can run wild. So even if he gives me 10-20, like, yeah, I get your Victor Robles comp, but Victor Robles' playing time is, he might be platooning with Dominic Canzone right now. Like, Bader's playing every day unless something happens. And that, like, I'm not, like, in a 15 is where I'm seeing that as a big potential at his ADP at 303. You're talking about your last outfielders. So I can see taking the chance there. I don't think there's a lot of 15-50. I know I'm shooting for the ceiling with this.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's a lot of 15-15 guys going at post 300. So that's where my brain goes.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, there's some interesting guys, though, going, you know, like, you know, Jordan Walker is still young. Jesus Sanchez is, you know, still there. Like, Jake Mangum.
You're in Platoonville, though, is the problem.
I know, but, like, sometimes Platoonville, I'd rather take a good platoon player than take a full-time player that's not good. And I think that's what Bader is, right? Like, Bader's a really good defender. He, like, Bader would have been a great signing had they not signed Luis Arraez. Because they should have said, like, we're just going to put good defenders for our pitchers, right? Like,
we don't need both.
Like, one or the other. You're either going, like, hey, this guy can hit, or this guy can play defense. Like, if you can't get both in the same guy, like, pick a lane. Like, don't say we're going to get a really bad defensive second baseman and a really good defensive center fielder. So, like, Bader will help the Giants outfield, which has been one of the worst outfield defenses in baseball, right? Like, he will substantially make that better. From an offensive perspective, like, yes, like, there's 15-15 upside, but there's also, like, 8-12 with a 220 batting average downside.
Let me ask you this, though. If he's hitting 220, is he still playing every day?
Yeah, because the defense.
If that's the case, we are hosed all around. So.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah, no. Because
honestly, as much as I like Bader for his defense, and, like, I didn't mind the signing, I was like, why do you guys hate Luis Matos so much?
That's where I was just about to say. Is, like, if that's the case, like, I want Luis Matos to get a full season, or at least platoon him with what's his face, Drew Gilbert. Like, let's see those two young guys play every day.
Find someone who loves you as much as the Giants hate Luis Matos. Like, that should be a goal for life.
Like, I know it was, like, a 1 week hot stretch, but let's just, God forbid,
give him an opportunity.
Him play 140 games. I guarantee you, he gets comfortable. Like, you saw the skills are there. Now let's see what he can do.
I honestly believe that Luis Matos is better than Bader right now. Like,
I won't argue that.
Maybe not quite as good defensively, but not that much of a downgrade. And I think he's a better offense player. Like, the fact that they won't just give Luis Matos a chance just rubs me the wrong way. And again, this is the fence sitting thing, because, like, Bader doesn't make the team substantially better, right? Like, but he's a signing. We signed someone.
Oh, it sucked too, because in their Bubble in the Blue Discord, like, the day before they signed Bader, we had a gigantic thread on Matos. Like, we were going back and forth. People were asking questions in DCs, and I was pumping him up. I'm like, do it. Like, he's at worst, he's platooning with Gilbert in the outfield. Like, he's going to play every day. He's going to platoon. I think he's better than Gilbert. Like, he should play. Then they go ahead and sign Bader within 24 hours. It was awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. All right, let's go to Bryce Eldridge. Supposed to DH for now. Maybe play some first base as well. We know the power is immense throughout the minors. We also know he's going to be 21 years old this year and is apparently fully recovered from wrist surgery, is what they're saying. Eldridge is util only in an FBC if you play on that format. His ADP is 405, and a lot of that's because he's util only, and there's still some question marks, I'd imagine, with Eldridge. I love the skills. I want him to be great. I have yet to draft Bryce Eldridge.
I drafted him once. It's a complete dart throw, but it's totally worth taking the gamble at this price. And the reason is like, you are going to know pretty quickly what Bryce Eldridge is. You know, he's a guy who's probably going to strike out a 30% clip. He is, you know, the batting average probably isn't going to be great. Like, you know, like, yes, especially on early on in his minors career, like he had some, like, you know, 290s batting averages, really up until, you know, last year when he, you know, hit AAA. You know, his batting averages were mostly really good. They will not be good in the majors, at least not early on. You know, we're talking 220 to 240, you know, and 240 being like, you'll be happy if he gets a 240 batting average. But what he does have is probably more power than any San Francisco Giant since Barry Bonds. And that's saying something because we do have Devers on this team. But like, I legitimately think that if Bryce Eldridge can, he doesn't even have to make league average contact. Like, he can have below league average contact, but as long as like the zone contact is like above 80%, like he could hit 40 bombs. But I think you'll know really quickly what he's going to be this year. So like, taking that dart throw around pick 400 is great, because if you hit and he does hit 35 bombs this year, you just got 35 bombs from the guy you drafted pick 400, right? If it doesn't work out, he's an easy drop and you move on. And you'll know really quickly, right? Because the Giants are at least feigning like they want to be competitive. And if he is going, if he starts the year 1-for-27, he'll be in the minors and you can drop him real quick. So, or he may not make it out of the spring training and go straight to the minors, right? And like, but then you can drop him. Like, the price attached to it right now is fine. The only problem will be is if he goes on an unbelievable tear in spring training.
No, the price,
and all of a sudden the price goes through the roof, because this is a former top, or is a top 10 prospect in a lot of circles that is crushing spring training, and then he goes cold, because this is a guy who will go cold throughout the season. Like, you know, like he'll have really, really hot streaks, and then he'll have really cold streaks. You have to be able to kind of just navigate those waters in season. But at pick 400, there's no downside.
Yeah, in a fab league, I fully agree. Like, the reason I haven't taken it is mainly all DC shares. Like, I'm not playing that game. But the fab at 400, literally, it's your last pick. I think he actually went undrafted in the OC I did Monday night. Like,
yeah.
So I get what your point is there, 100%. Let's talk catchers, because we have to. Patrick Bailey, good defensive catcher. He showed signs of life late last season. We were like, okay, is it there? But in the end, it was still 6 homers, 222 average, ADP of 422. Like, this is a deep, deep, deep death peeps, unless I'm missing something.
It's a draft champions or NL only. There is not much offensively to this profile, but he is so good at calling a game and he is so good defensively that he will play. And so, like, as your third catcher or even fourth catcher in a DC, you want the catcher is the most injured position outside of pitcher. Right, like it is in terms of the offensive positions, it's the most injured position. So you want to have a guy as like your third catcher in a DC that is going to play, that's going to be there, and Patrick Bailey will. Like, he's going to catch the majority of the games for the Giants, and like I totally get it as a third catcher in DC. If you're playing in a one catcher league or a two catcher league, he shouldn't even be on your radar. Like, there is like he isn't even a guy I want to stream. You know, in a 15-team two-catcher league. Like, he's not worth anything. He does make the pitching staff better. But, like, that's it. Yeah, he's a great real-life. Like, he should have been – he should have won the Platinum Glove.
Yeah.
I saw, like, something, like, during, like, the peak of Yadier Molina's, like, run, like, the three-year peak of his career, his WAR was, like, you know, 14.2, and then like Patrick Bailey's WAR was like 16 last year or something like that, or offensive WAR, like it was like something ridiculous like that. It wasn't last year, but whatever it was. Oh no, it was like 3.2. But like he's so good defensively.
He's a beast.
He's just absolutely amazing. But offensively, he's worthless for fantasy.
Yeah, that's why I usually don't worry too much about it. I'm like, his defense does it all. It's fine. Do your thing. But
From a real life perspective, I love having Patrick Bailey. From a fantasy perspective, I just see no upside. Yeah.
Yep. Anybody else worth discussing on the bench? Like we mentioned Matos, who's actually in AAA.
Yeah.
Gilbert. Casey Schmidt is another. Like, I'd rather give Casey Schmidt a shot than Luis Urias personally, but here we are.
Honestly, that's what they should have done, because Casey Schmidt is a really good defender. It. Like, I don't think Casey Schmidt is a very good offensive player, and I don't think he ever will be, but he's a really good defender. Like, the I understand, like, they tried to make a run at Donovan, they tried to make a run at Horner, and it just didn't work out. Well, then just go with the in-house option of Casey Schmidt. That at least you know you get good defense up the middle for your pitchers. Your strength is your pitching staff. Like don't ruin your strength.
Yep, agreed. Speaking of pitching staff, let's head to the mound. You mentioned him before, Logan Webb. He's got a lot of second and third place Cy Young votes in recent seasons. And that helps when you've thrown over 200 innings in three straight years and 190 plus in four straight. Ratios are good. He can strike guys out when he needs to. It's not a yearly thing, but he has shown he can do it. ADP is around 55 over the last week, so you got to pay the piper if you want some Logan Webb. And you already mentioned your concerns about Logan Webb potentially, so you want to elaborate on that, I guess.
It's mostly just Luis Urias and Rafael Devers on that side of the infield. That defense is so bad on that side of the infield. The other side is great. Chapman's a great defender. Willie Adames is pretty good. I do worry a little bit about a guy who's got a 53% ground ball rate, depending on Luis Urias to get ground balls out of the middle. Cause he won't get ground balls out of the middle. He may not get any ground balls at all. So that being said, like, I don't have a lot of concerns about Logan Webb. I think he is like the perfect accumulator, especially for a deep league. Like, if you're in a 15 team league, you love a guy like Logan Webb because you can just bank on innings for him. You know, he led Major League Baseball in innings pitched last year. There's no reason to think he won't do it again this year. Like, he is just a workhorse. Like, it's weird because it's almost like we got a reincarnation of Matt Cain, because that's what Logan Webb is. It's just a guy who goes out there and delivers amazing, you know, workloads year in and year out. You love the fact that we saw the strikeout rate get up to 26% last year. And I tend to think it'll probably come back down. He just has so much contact. He doesn't get a lot of swing and miss. But, like, even if it comes back down to, like, 22%, because he volumes so much, you're going to get a lot of strikeouts from the guys. So, like, I think he's fine where he goes. I really do. I do think that he will regress a little bit, but, like, that's just because his season was so amazing last year.
Exactly. It's, like, literally he was one of the best pitchers. I think, again, off the top of my head, I think it was most strikeouts in the National League and most innings in baseball or something along those lines, because it's some crazy number that you wouldn't expect from a Giants pitcher. All right, let's talk Robbie Ray. First season back in, like, a real workload since 2022. Obviously returned from Tommy John late in 2024. Got his feet wet through 182 innings last year. Ratios are good. Strikeouts are good. You can tell he was running out of gas, though, as the season went on. It was just one of those things. So you have to believe, was the increase in innings an okay thing and he'll be fine? Or are you concerned? ADP's 161 from Robbie Ray, who, again, very solid season, but there were some wear and tear towards the end.
Yeah, I mean, I love Robbie Ray. There is a little bit of concerns, not so much about, like, the wear and tear of the season, but just, like, the wear and tear of a career. He's, you know, he's 34 at this point, and, you know, he does have that Tommy John under his belt. And yes, he looked good for the majority of the year last year, and then, like you said, just, like, it started to kind of catch up to him. And I don't know that we're going to go back to, you know, the years of Robbie Ray at a 30%+ strikeout rate, which kind of softens who Robbie Ray can be, because he still will have issues with command at times. That being said, like, I don't think this price is bad at all. And I do like Robbie Ray a lot, because there's not many guys who are going to give you a strikeout an inning and throw 180 innings. And I think that's what Robbie Ray has, you know, years of throwing 180, 190 innings. I think he will do that this year. I think he'll do it with, like, a 25%-26% strikeout rate. You know, the whip may be the concerning part at times. depending on how the command and control goes. But though the park helps prevent some of those homers that maybe if he was in a different park would hurt him. And I think there's no reason to think that he's going to be hurt, you know, other than all pitchers can get hurt at some point. So I like Robbie Ray, and I do think the price, you know, at, you know, pick, where is it?
Like 160-ish.
160. Yeah, 154. Yeah. You know, that's totally fine. Like he goes in an area around kind of, you know, some older guys who are a little bit injury prone, you know, the Zach Wheelers, the Sandy Alcantaras. Like, I think that's totally fine. Like, I don't think that's a bad or an ADP you have to jump on.
Yeah. He's probably got a ceiling over those guys too. So something to like there. One of the new Giants, Tyler Molly. A lot of people like him when he's healthy. When he's healthy is the problem. Yeah. 86 and two thirds innings last year. Strikeouts are down, but he's been battling injuries quite a bit, so I think it was good just to see him out there. The ERA was still good. ERA indicators don't agree so much. I love the move because you're taking a shot on a guy that I think has a ton of upside, just hasn't put it together of late. ADP's 353 over the last 7 days. I got a ton of Molly in DCs personally.
I love Tyler Molly. DCs is actually a place I wouldn't draft him because you can't drop him with that injury history, yeah. Right? But like everywhere else, I have no problem with Molly. You know, one thing the Giants have done well for like the last decade is take these guys coming off of injuries or coming off of down years, these kind of vets, pitcher vets, and turn them into really useful players for a year, right? You know, the Kevin Gausman, Carlos Rodon, the Sean Manias, right? Like, they've been really good at, like, these one-year rehab stints because the Giants have made it really, really obvious they do not want to invest long-term into pitching. And I understand that because the health of pitchers sucks. It doesn't matter how healthy of a pitcher you are. You're bound to get hurt because you throw pitches. So I really like this from a Giants perspective. I also like it from a Molly perspective, right? Currently going at pick 461, which means he's not being drafted inside of a standard 15-team league. Right. You know, because that goes to pick 450. So like the price is free in, you know, your standard 15 team leagues. And there's a lot of upside. He was really, really good in that 86 inning sample last year. Now, the hard part is he has not thrown more than those 86 innings in a single season since 2022 because he's been hurt. And so this is why I like him more in a fab league where I can drop him really quick, but he could be your last pick in a fab league. If he hits, great. If he puts together 140 really good innings, you're going to be stoked. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't, you can drop him really fast.
No, totally agree. I think there's a ton of upside there. Maybe I should do more fab than DC. I'm just looking for innings. And another innings guy is Adrian Houser. It was 125 innings last year. You know, he's never really put together the most he's had is 142, but the Giants are going to get every ounce out of them they can. Ratios, again, usually decent. Not going to strike a lot of guys out. It's a theme. That's why the Arise signing makes even less sense. They want the ball in play with these pitchers they signed. ADP is around 460-ish over the last 7 days for Houser. What are your thoughts on Adrian Houser?
Yeah, Adrian Houser's got to be pretty pissed that he signed with San Francisco and then they signed Luis Arise to play second base because – he's a, you know, 50% ground ball guy that now has or at least Arise behind him. But like again, this is another one of these like 1 year signs where they go, hey, we're gonna, or actually I guess sign him for 2 years with an option for 2028. But like there's nothing super pretty about Houser for fantasy. Like he does not strike guys out. But he can just be a innings guy. And you expect him to throw like 130 to 140, you know, good innings with ratios, and in that park you're not worried about like a homer problem popping up or anything like that. So I just hope that he doesn't get BABIP to death because of Luis Arraez. Like that's my one fear with a guy like Houser. Like there is no upside on Houser, and so like if he gets BABIP to death, he's gonna be worthless.
Yep, and that could very well happen with this team. Last projected starter is Landon Roop, who we saw some really good stuff from him last year. We also saw some injuries that slowed things down. He's projected to be the fifth starter. He costs you an ADP of around 445 right now, so very, very affordable. I don't know if we've even seen the ceiling with Landon Roop. We might not have seen the floor either. But what are your thoughts on Roop, who, to me, it's like I think everyone's talking about the veterans, but this could be one of the sneakier ones.
I like Roop. I think there is a really interesting pitcher here. The problem is, start to start, he was really, really inconsistent. He'd go out there in individual starts, and you'd be like, okay, this is the Landon Roop we've been, you know, talking about. And, you know, when he goes out there and throws, like, you know, six innings against the Dodgers, striking out eight with, you know, one earned run given up and only one walk, you're like, yeah, that's the guy. This is the guy, like, I really, really thought was there. And then against the same Dodgers team, you know, goes an inning, a third, and gives up six earned run, five walks. Like, he's just so inconsistent, especially with his control start to start, that it makes it really hard to use him in fantasy because you never really know which Roop is going to show up any individual day. I do like the Giants from a pitching development perspective. And so, like, I tend to have some hope for Landon Roop. And I don't think that the price is bad at all, right? So he's going to pick 545, which, again, outside of your 15-team leagues, like, cutoff line, since it's only 450 picks. So, like, he's a guy, like, you could put on the end of your bench and be okay with because you know you can drop him real quick. But I do get the feeling he's going to be more of a streamer this year than anything else. There is some upside. If he can get the control in check and really just stack the zone and stop trying to nibble on the end or the edges, which tends to bite him, I could see a breakout year for Roop because I do think the stuff is better than it showed last year. But until we see that, and so another guy to watch in spring training, is he attacking the zone or is he not? That could mean big things for Roop, or he's just going to be the same guy, which is a guy you're not going to trust or be able to trust, you know, start to start.
Agreed. And it also, I'm bringing this into the play now, is the reason why I'm like the arrive sign, we're going to keep coming back to this, why it bugs me even more when you could have traded for a Donovan or a Horner or something, is you have pitchers like Carson Wisenhunt, Blade Tidwell, Trevor McDonald, Carson Seymour, Hayden Birdsong, and Keaton Wynn. Not that there's a longer list, but they have a lot of young options that you could have mixed and matched in the current rotation. You could have traded. I guess I'll say it this way. Do you see any of them potentially having an impact this year? Like, who would be the ones you'd be looking to target, like I say, in a DC, because Fab's difficult at the moment?
Yeah. That's a really good question. Birdsong to me is the only one I'm super interested in.
Yeah.
Like there's just so much upside in Birdsong stuff. I do think ultimately he probably is just a really, really good reliever. Because the stuff is really good. He does struggle with command and control, and that's the big issue. You look at like location plus on Birdsong, and it was 86 last year, 88 for his career. That is well below the, you know, the 100 average for command plus. But the stuff is really good. And like, if he could take a Robbie Ray route where they say, just throw it in the zone, like, don't worry about what happens after, because you're so good when you're hitting the zone that you're going to get swings and misses. And yeah, you may give up a homer or two, but they're going to be solo shots because you're filling up the zone. I could see Birdsong taking off. And I do think there's going to be opportunities in this rotation when you've got, you know, guys like Tyler Molly, right? Who have had injury issues. Robbie Ray's had injury issues. You know, Landon Roop's very improving. Like, I think there are going to be opportunities for guys. And I think Birdsong would be the one I would bet on. Though I don't know that I would draft any of these guys in a DC. I just don't see enough upside in most of them. And I really don't like clogging. If I'm going to take a guy who's not starting the year in the majors, I'm going to shoot for the biggest upside I can. Right.
Yeah. Birdsong's been the one I've been focused on, if any, to your point.
Yeah. He is the most, really the only intriguing from a fantasy perspective one. But I wouldn't invest in him because there is a really good chance, because they have so many guys on the 40 man at AAA that are starting pitchers. Like, there's a chance that like they do bring up Wisenhunt, or they bring up Tidwell, or they bring up McDonald, or they bring up Wynn. Like, they've so many, they've got six starters at AAA on the 40 man. Like, there's no guarantee, especially pitching in a park like in Sacramento, yep. like where he, like Birdsong could just get lit up and they go, well, he's not doing well. We can't bring him up. Like, you could wait forever. Like, Birdsong could, there's a world in which Birdsong does not even appear in the majors this year.
Yeah, no, that's 100% possible. Let's talk closers. Again, the priority I had coming into the offseason, let's get a closer. There was a big market for closers. That dried up quickly, and now Ryan Walker is still there. Now, if we get the Ryan Walker from a few years ago that learned how to get swings and misses and strike guys out, okay, great. The guy we got last year, not so much. So, again, this is like an Elliot Ramos problem meets the bullpen. Walker's ADP is around 150 in the inflated closers world. What are it's your super thoughts inflated. On Walker?
The yeah. closer's really hard this year, and that's why Walker in previous years would have been like pick 200, and now he's going 150, and that is actually feels like a good price considering yep, the other prices. Come. Yeah, and I actually really like the price. I think this is Walker's job. There is nobody else in this bullpen that I think they are going to be comfortable handing over the ninth inning to, at least initially. Like, obviously, we felt the same way about Walker last year heading into drafts. Like, this is Walker's job, and he lost to Camilo Duvall. But there is no Camilo Duvall on this roster anymore. And so, like, I really don't think that unless Walker is truly atrocious, then I think he holds this job all year. Unless tried to trade for someone at the deadline, right? But if they were going to do that, why wouldn't they have traded for someone now?
Or signed so many options for like $10 to $12 million. Like, that's what frustrated me. Well, go, I know Fairbanks has the finger thing. Okay, don't go him. There was Finnegan. There was, like, you just got the list of options. It was, get Kenley. I don't care. Yeah. Like,
Kenley would have been a great option, honestly.
Yeah, I was just like, what are we doing?
I don't know. I think ultimately, yeah, I think we are going to see we're going to see Ryan Walker as the dude. So, like, I have no problem investing him as, like, my second closer or even my first closer if I'm trying to be cheap on saves.
Yeah, that's where I've kind of come to finally, because, like, last year, like you mentioned, there's Duvall, there's Randy Rodriguez. Yeah. Like, obviously, neither one are in town. And what's there right now ain't it. So, yeah, it feels like it's Walker's world to roll. All right, any prospects of interest for you that could potentially have an impact this season? We mentioned a bunch of pitchers already, but I guess anything from the offensive side of things?
Not really.
No, there isn't.
I mean, there are some interesting prospects in this system, but most of the really interesting ones are really far away. Yep. And so this is the problem about the fence sitting that I was talking about, is they have this team that the team on paper is fine. It's okay, right? It's good. Mm-hmm. But it's not, I don't know if it's a playoff team, and I don't know, it's definitely not a championship team. So you're like, well, if they're just okay on the surface, right? Like, underneath, the prospects should be good. No, they're not. They're not. They just have not invested in the prospects like they should. Now, they have started to invest internationally, which I love to see, because I think the international pool is where you can really find guys who kind of you can, you know, develop, and they can turn into something really, really special. But those guys are really, really far away. And so for 2026, and really for the next 2 or 3 years, there are not going to be any Giants prospects where you're going, oh, I want to draft this guy in my redraft league. Just, it's going to be like 2028, 2029 and beyond.
Yep. Yep. It's sad, but true. All right. Last question I have for you. Ask every guest. What are your expectations for 2026 for the Giants?
More of the same. Third in the NL West. We're going to miss the playoffs. We're not going to do anything the trade deadline. And I'm going to be sitting here next year saying the exact same things I said at the beginning of the episode.
Pretty much. Unfortunately, sadly, I think you're correct there, because – and the worst part about it, Justin, I think you might agree with this as well. They're going to have a stretch that makes us believers. They do it every year, single year. And then they fall so flat on their face. And it's just, it's painful to even turn the game on at night at that point. And it's just like, if I wasn't in my office doing work every evening, I wouldn't probably put it on some nights, but here I am. So
yep.
I feel you, my friend. All right. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yeah, all social media platforms, Justin Mason, FWFB, Fangraphs, Fantasy Pros, where you find my writing, Fangraphs, Fantasy, Friends of Fantasy Benefits, where you find the podcasting, and then TGFBI. If you want to sign up for a satellite league, do that as soon as possible because they'll fill up fast.
Get in where you fit in, and as always, my friend, thanks for joining me. It's a pleasure chatting with you, and we'll be in touch in the coming days, of course.
Love to chat with you, Bubba. Thanks for having me on again.
All right, everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 832, your 2026 San Francisco Giants therapy session. Catch you all next time.